77 WABC. The following program does not necessarily reflect the views of WABC Radio.
The following program is brought to you by NYU Winthrop Hospital. It's the weekend. Be good to yourself. It's Katz's Corner with Dr. Aaron Katz, where you get simple, straightforward answers to your questions about health, from diet and supplements to lifestyle changes. To reach Dr. Katz, call 800-848-WABC. Now, live on 77 WABC, it's the chairman of urology at NYU Winthrop Hospital in New York. Here is Dr. Aaron Katz.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome again to Katz's Corner here on WABC Radio in New York. I'm your host, Dr. Aaron Katz, and we are live. If you want to give us a call at 1-800-848-WABC, that number again is 1-800-848-9222. So glad that you could all join us on what sounds like it's going to be rather chilly out there today, but it should be fine. And look forward to talking with my guest this morning, Dr. Anthony Corcoran. He's on the line and will be discussing an important topic with us this morning on bladder cancer. And Dr. Corcoran and I were out in Arizona last weekend at the Society of Urologic Oncology's meeting, a fascinating meeting giving all the updates on what's going on for physicians in the area of cancers of the urinary tract, which is basically the kidney, bladder, and prostate. And the whole field is dramatically changing, and we're going to get into that this morning. But the area of immune therapy is exploding in our field, as it is in other fields, breast cancer and lung cancer and melanomas as well. So we need to educate all of you about that, because it really has changed the landscape of how we are treating so many cancers and making advances in patients that were not responding in the past to different forms of chemotherapy are now able to just go on and live an excellent quality of life, because the immune therapies that are being explored now don't have the side effects that the standard chemotherapy in the past were associated with. I also want to take a moment and thank my wonderful colleague, Dr. Colin Brathwaite, the chairman of surgery at NYU Winthrop, who took the helm while I was away. He always does a terrific job, and I hope that you enjoyed the show. If you missed any of the shows, by the way, you can always check them out at our website, which is WinthropUrology.com. That's WinthropUrology.com, and you can check the and listen to the podcasts. So this morning I've asked the chief of urologic oncology at NYU Winthrop, Dr. Anthony Corcoran, who's been at Winthrop for several years now. He's been on the show and always is a wealth of information and has done an outstanding job in the area of, well, all the areas of urologic oncology, as I mentioned, but he's been really brought the area of bladder cancer to NYU Winthrop in a number of different ways, both in the early stage and late stages of bladder cancer. So if you have a question or concern, feel free to give us a call. That number again is 1-800-848-9222. Good morning, Dr. Corcoran. Anthony, my good buddy and colleague at Winthrop, how are you?
Very good. Good morning, Dr. Katz.
Good morning. Good morning. I know that you're a little under the weather this morning. I appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you very much.
Of course. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So let's talk about this, the area of bladder cancer. And you and I were out at the meeting, and I know that a lot of the meeting is focused on the immune therapy and advanced cancers of the bladder, kidney and prostate. But let's talk about bladder cancer for a moment. And what types of patients are you seeing, and how are they presenting? I mean, how would somebody even know that they had something like bladder cancer?
Yeah, that's a good question, because, you know, it's something that we screen for. So, you know, unlike, say, breast cancer or prostate cancer, where we colon cancer, where we have these discrete screening processes that, you know, everyone hopefully goes through who's eligible. Bladder cancer does not have that. So you really need to be attuned to the potential symptoms, so that if you have some of them, you could potentially catch it early. And in general, bladder cancer occurs in men over the age of 40 who may have a smoking history or some other occupational exposure, like there used to be dyes that were involved, but I think those are used less, and maybe some other chemicals. So, you know, it typically presents, meaning the first symptoms are blood in the urine, and oftentimes that's detected by visible blood in the urine. Certainly if you have any visible blood in the urine, you immediately need to see a urologist without question. But sometimes that presents with microscopic blood in the urine. So when you go for your routine physical exams every year, your primary care physician should be sending urine tests along with hopefully a PSA for prostate cancer screening if you're a man. And they would see potentially blood in the urine and then get referred to a urologist, which if there's blood in the urine on a microscopic level, it's less likely to be something to worry about, but nevertheless should be evaluated.
So that's a real concern, blood in the urine, but if you see it, but you might not know it. And so when you're going to the physician for your annual exam, and a lot of people tend to get their annual exams at the first of the year, you know, January's coming up, let me get my routine, you know, examination. Should people, if you're not even a smoker, let's just say, you know, you're going for your yearly exam, should you say to your doctor, hey, by the way, you know, I want a urine test and just to check, even if you're not having any symptoms? Is that standard?
I would. I definitely would. Because, you know, it's pretty non-invasive. Other than the downside of urinating in a little cup, there's really not much downside to it. So, you know, I would do that as a standard part of your physical exam.
Okay. And then when you get back your tests, and I encourage all of you, by the way, to know your numbers, and you should, you know, when you're calling your doctor, get copies of your tests. And so you're looking down the urine, and, you know, it'll highlight if it's normal, if it's abnormal. So any blood in the urine is abnormal. Is that right?
That's right. And okay. A lot of times there's just a chemical reaction test that's done that can indicate trace blood and whatnot. But really, you know, ultimately, if that's positive, then you need to actually have the lab look under the microscope to see if there are red blood cells in the urine, which are the actual components of our blood. And if those are in the urine, then definitively there is blood in the urine, and then it needs further workup.
Okay.
So that's how we decide what to do.
Right. All right. And what about people that are on like blood thinners? Because so many people now, they get cardiac stents, they're on, you know, aspirin, not beyond aspirin, Plavix, and Eliquist and Brilanta, Plavix. Can that, if you're on these blood thinners, can that cause blood to leak into the urine? And is that normal or is that still abnormal?
Yeah, it can result in blood being in the urine, but it's still not normal. It should be worked up because it may be unmasking what is actually going on behind the scenes, which could be something like a bladder tumor or a kidney tumor. And, you know, that's not as likely as something like it's maybe just a benign cause for blood in the urine. And the purpose of the workup isn't necessarily to tell you why there's blood in the urine, but it's to rule out anything worrisome and be reassuring that you have nothing to worry about. So even if you're on a blood thinner, you need further workup.
And it doesn't mean anything's wrong. I mean, it could be you need some further tests, but it could be just normal. That's you, right? You may just have some normal blood cells, and it may not be a tumor or a kidney stone, I guess, which would also give you blood in the urine. But it may not be anything, you know, you just need to be checked out is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay. And we're talking, by the way, if you're just tuning in to Cat's Corner, we're Dr. Anthony Corcoran, who is Chief of Urologic Oncology at NYU Winthrop and deals with a lot of bladder cancer patients. Now, let's say, so what would be the next step then? So you get this call from the doctor, and the doctor says, you know what, we found some blood in the urine. You need to see the urologist. They're going to come in. They're going to see you. And what are you going to do?
Well, depending on the degree of blood, we may either get an ultrasound or a CAT scan, but some kind of imaging test to look at the kidneys and look at the bladder. But much in the way that, you know, you need to do a colonoscopy to look at the lining of the colon, if we're looking for abnormalities of the colon, you need to have a cystoscopy, which is, you know, a camera test to look at the lining of the bladder, because there's no real CAT scan or MRI or PET scan that can accurately look at the lining of an organ. So in the office, we would typically do a cystoscopy, which luckily is a very, you know, brief procedure. It's not as much to do as a colonoscopy. It takes about a minute or two to do in the office and usually tolerated quite well. And that's really the workup, you know, to make sure that the bladder looks clear and that there's no bladder tumors. But occasionally, you know, we will find bladder tumors, and then we need to go from there.
So you can see, just so people know, that you look inside the bladder. It's done in the office. Doesn't take very long. And, you know, for male, for men, you give them some anesthesia, in along the tube so that there's no pain there. And then you can tell right away. You know right away if there's something wrong.
Yes. I mean, you could see the abnormality, and you can basically diagnose it as a bladder cancer on the spot if there is one. You really can't say anything more about it. You know, some bladder cancers are low grade, meaning they grow slowly. Others are high grade, meaning they have the potential to grow more aggressively. You can't really, you know, diagnose that in the office. That requires a more thorough biopsy in an operating room setting. But the diagnosis of bladder cancer itself can be made in the office at that time.
Do you think now that we're seeing more bladder cancer, I mean, how prevalent is it? I mean, because prostate cancer is obviously the number one in men, with, I guess, close to 200,000 cases a year. It seems like almost all men, as we get older, are going to develop prostate cancer. But that's not true for bladder cancer. As you mentioned, there's definitely known risk factors. One of them is the men and women, I guess, that were exposed down at World Trade Center. That's another risk factor. But do you think, where is it on the spectrum of, you know, common cancers? Is it, and do you think is it increasing?
It's probably about steady overall, maybe slight increase. It is in the top 10. Both for men and women, in the, you know, types of cancers that can occur. From my standpoint, the view is skewed because every week I'm going through the scenario we just outlined, where I see someone who had blood in their urine and make the diagnosis of a bladder cancer. But that's because I, you know, specialize in this area. But certainly it is something that is very prevalent and very common. And what is most frustrating, I think, is that smokers, who are obviously at higher risk, don't understand that beyond lung cancer, they're at risk for other cancers. I think everyone focuses on lung cancer. And so I think smokers really just need to be aware that, you know, bladder cancer is a risk, and that should be on their radar if they ever see anything, you know, wrong, to promptly go to a urologist.
Yeah, so it is prevalent. And just thinking about the cigarettes that you were saying, because, you know, I was at the holiday party last night at downtown at NYU, and I saw some people, even in the party, you know, you can't smoke, nobody smokes in a party, but I saw some people taking out these pens, and they're e-cigarettes. Seems to be a little bit more acceptable that you can do this even at social settings. Is there a concern there for those things? Is that known?
We don't have the amount of studies and data that we have for tobacco smoke with these new products. But mentioning NYU, there is research that was done at NYU in urology that looked at e-cigarettes and they're finding chemicals and finding out that it looks like the risk is at least equivalent to tobacco smoke, and it may be even greater. We don't really know yet. So I would put that in the same category as someone who smokes tobacco.
And I have to ask you, what about marijuana? Because I think you recently had a patient that was relatively young, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Same
scenario. I did have a young patient who was a marijuana smoker who had bladder cancer. Now, there's no, again, robust data in this area. I did see a paper, actually, that was linked with maybe not an increased risk, but I have seen other studies that show potentially an increased risk. So I think the studies there are mixed, but I would just say in general, if you're putting smoke into your lungs, you're probably not benefiting yourself.
Yeah, in some way or another. And you're right, these chemicals get into your lung, they get into your blood, and what, you know, the kidney filters all of your blood, and these chemicals then are sitting in the kidney, which puts you at risk for kidney cancer, and then it can filter down into the urine and down into the bladder, and you wind up with a bladder cancer.
Yeah, I mean, think about the urine is sitting in the bladder for hours at a time. So if the urine is filled with abnormal chemicals from smoke, and it's just sitting there, I mean, that's not a good combination. So that's how this process happens.
Is that why you think men are more predisposed to bladder cancer than women? Because as men get a little bit older, they don't empty their bladder as well because of the prostate. And so the urine's kind of sitting around longer and causing some...
I think that's exactly right.
Hmm. Okay. And so now let's take the scenario where you've done the cystoscopy and you see someone has a bladder tumor and you say, okay, we have to bring you in for a procedure to remove it with a scope, not major surgery, but, and the pathologist comes back and says that there's bladder cancer, and you're sitting with the patient. Of course, there's always options for many types of cancers. What are the options for bladder cancer? And I guess it depends upon, you know, the aggressiveness, like any other cancer. But give us an idea of what people, what treatments are available now.
Yeah, so, I mean, in general, the fork in the road for what our treatments are going to be is related to muscle invasion. The muscle is kind of the main thick layer of the bladder in the middle. So if the tumor is invading the muscle, then we have one road that we would go down, which is focused on preventing recurrence, or not invading the muscle. We'd be preventing recurrence with something called BCG, which is really the first immunotherapy, if you think about it. It's been around for 40 years, and it's a bacteria that goes in the bladder and helps spur your immune system on to go on and fight the bladder cancer and help prevent recurrence, because bladder cancer tends to recur. So this treatment would be focused on, you know, keeping the bladder intact and preventing recurrence. It's done in the office, usually takes, you know, a couple sessions to do this, six sessions overall, and it can be very successful. And then if it's invading the muscle, that's a little more of a serious matter where it could have the ability to spread to other parts of your body. So that's the tipping point where we would say you need more aggressive treatment. And the standard of care treatment, meaning the gold standard we compare all other treatments to, would be at that point potentially chemotherapy and bladder removal.
It's fascinating, right? I mean, someone actually said, some physician sat down and said, okay, you know what I'm going to do for bladder cancer? I'm going to put a bacteria in your bladder. Actually, it's a form of tuberculosis. And we're going to put this in your bladder, and it's going to generate some inflammation in your bladder, an immune response. And that immune response is going to cross over and attack your bladder cancer. And that was discovered, I believe it was discovered at NYU, was it not?
I will have to take your word for it, actually. I don't know.
Well, Pablo Morales, I thought, was one of the first doctors to do that. We'll have to check that out, but I think it was. But beyond who discovered it, I mean, it's amazing that someone actually sat and thought of this. But you're absolutely right. It's been around for at least 20 years, I would say, or maybe more. And it is a definite form of immune therapy, because if you are immune compromised, let's say that your immune system is not so great, or you're on steroids, or you have some kind of disease process where it lowers your immune system, it doesn't work. You can't give it, right?
That's right.
That's fascinating. So, okay, so let's take, and I know you've been really a pioneer in this area of removing the bladder and then making, you know, people say, okay, so you're going to remove the bladder, am I going to get a bladder transplant? Well, there's no bladder transplant, but you now can make a new bladder for people using other body parts. Tell us about this.
So there's many different options for what to do with the urine after the bladder is removed. And we have to do something, obviously. And, you know, some people may want kind of the simplest way to heal up without any problems. And many people who are, say, are younger and really want their lives to be kind of the same and not have to worry about any external bags, want, you know, more of the internal approach. And those approaches are certainly evolving. And one major innovation in the last couple of years has been the use of robotics. But Essentially, we take a big section of your small intestine and form it into a bladder. We call this a neobladder or new bladder. And we hook all your urinary tract up to this new bladder, and essentially then you can urinate through the tube you used to urinate through, your urethra. So externally, things are essentially the same. Now, this is a little more investment in time in healing up, because you have to kind of potty train yourself again to use this new bladder and figure out how it works. But that's a process that many people can master just fine, and we get you through that. And you know, you can go on to regain your usual functionality.
Yeah, I mean, God gave us, what, 21 feet of small intestine or something like that, right? Is that right? Some you know, a crazy amount of small intestine. So you're taking, what, 1 foot, let's say, of that, or not even, or maybe?
Six. I always go by centimeters.
So centimeters, yeah.
Lawrence Taylor's 56 centimeters.
56 centimeters. Yeah, that metric system, especially in the morning, I can't get it. But it's probably a foot, right?
Yes.
But you don't need it, is what I'm saying, right? I mean, God gave us this 21 feet, and you take one, let's say 1 foot of the small intestine, and you put it into a ball shape, and you make a new bladder, and you connect it up to the kidneys, and people are urinating, you know, once they heal up, as you say, and are, you know, potty trained, as you say, normally. And there's nothing on the outside, and you can go and function and go on with your life. And more importantly, you can be cured.
Correct. Yes.
And this is a real cure.
Right. And now, with the introduction of two things, really enhanced recovery protocols, number one, and number two, robotic surgery, we have even more of the ability to minimize the impact of this surgery on the patient. So that's really been a great advance.
Yeah, I mean, certainly you need to be in the hospital once you have a new bladder that's made for you, but it's no longer you're in the hospital for, you know, weeks or months at a time. I mean, I think you told me recently you had a patient that left the hospital in under a week.
Yeah, I mean, that's not uncommon, actually, that, you know, patients, it used to be like a 14 to 21-day hospital stay for these surgeries. Now it's more of a, you know, 5 to 7 or 8 day hospital stay. And really, some people were keeping them an extra day just because they're ready to go by 3 or 4 days, and we want to, you know, give them an extra day or two just to be sure everything's okay. So we're almost having to keep them in the hospital rather than the other way around.
And, you know, just to let people know, you're not just removing the part of the bladder that has this tumor. This is for tumors that are deep into the bladder that, as you mentioned, go into the surrounding layers of the muscle of the bladder, and you're removing the entire bladder. And it can be done for men and for women. And even, as you mentioned, you've seen some younger patients now. And thankfully, you have this technology where even if a young patient requires this surgery, they can have a normal rest quality, their quality of life can be normal.
That's right. With the use of the robotic surgery, we can minimize, you know, the impact on the patient. We can help do a good nerve sparing procedure to help these patients maintain their, you know, sexual function, and also help maintain their urinary control once the neobladder heals. So, you know, these are significant advantages.
All right, Dr. Corcoran, that was fantastic. And in the last few moments, you and I were both out in Phoenix at the Society of Urologic Oncology, and I think we were both rather impressed about the new research and the new pathways for treating cancers, where they've gone beyond the organ. And for bladder cancer, immune therapy is a very, you know, the data looks very robust right now for patients, that there's a great hope that even if the cancer had spread or had returned, that different forms and different medications of immune therapy are available. Tell us a little bit about that. What was your thoughts about this?
Well, it's certainly changing all of oncology. With the acronym here is IO, the immuno-oncology era we are entering, and this is a major advance. So we have a new paradigm in pretty much all cancers, but in urologic cancers as well, specifically kidney and bladder. And these these drugs will change how we approach, you know, most advanced tumors. So, for instance, anyone who may need their bladder removed, the standard of care currently is to give chemotherapy prior to bladder removal because it does impart a survival advantage and a cure rate benefit to these patients. So we're currently using the what everyone thinks of as chemotherapy-type drugs, you know, the drugs that are systemic and, you know, may have some side effects and may make your hair fall out and those type things. Certainly necessary, but those unfortunate side effects. Now, the newer paradigms and clinical trials that are out there are looking at giving, you know, these immuno-oncology drugs in the preoperative setting, chemotherapy before surgery or neoadjuvant chemotherapy. And, you know, it's going to be the same with all the ways that we handle this. So for people with systemic disease, it's probably going to be immuno-oncology drugs. People who get chemotherapy after bladder cancer surgery, say if they're at elevated risk for recurrence, probably going to be immunotherapy down the road. So I would say within the next 5 years, these trials will have accrued and have their results, and, you know, the game will be changed.
Yeah, I mean, it's really fascinating that, you know, what we can do now with these medications to boost up our immune system. And, you know, one of the things about cancer is that our immune system has not recognized these cancer cells as being foreign. And what one of the aspects of these medications, what they do is they allow, they remove some specific proteins and markers on the cancer cell, and now our immune system can recognize these as foreign and bring in the key components of our immune system, the T cells, directly to the cancer cells and fight it. And so it's no longer just a generalized kill of all cells, like you say, your hair, your intestines, your skin, your brain, whatever it may be that chemotherapy did. It's more targeted and directed to these cancers themselves.
That's right.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think this is the new direction, and we're going to be seeing a lot more of this. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Corcoran. It's Dr. Anthony Corcoran. He's Chief of Urologic Oncology at NYU Winthrop Hospital. And if people are interested, I guess they should call. What would be the best number to reach you, Dr. Corcoran?
That would be our office number, which is 516-535-1900. We're over in, you know, Garden City, right near NYU Winthrop Hospital, and we have a multidisciplinary approach to all cancers, as you would say, where we have, you know, myself, we work with radiation oncology, we work with medical oncology, and so we have all our colleagues as part of our genital urinary oncology team.
Yes, and thank you so much, and congratulations for all the work that you're doing. I know this is the end of the half hour, but Dr. Corcoran also has offices out in Riverhead, so if you're in out east on Long Island, you can certainly see him there. I want to thank you all for tuning in, and I hope you have a wonderful stay. Stay warm. It's going to be a bit chilly. Tune in every Sunday. This is Dr. Aaron Katz.
WABC, New York.